And we're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, the second line. We learned yesterday, we were talking about the various cases where somebody injures or kills somebody accidentally, where the person, for example, a carpenter, for example, when somebody walks into a store, a blacksmith, somebody walks into a store. So we had a statement of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, that said that there's a certain case where he's chayev, if there was an injury, he's chayev to pay for nezek tzar, ripui, and sheves, but that if, on the other hand, if there was a death, then he's potter from galus. And we've been discussing which case is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina referring to. First, we said that it's first we said it's referring to the case of where somebody goes into the so first we said it refers to the case of on Mishnah where or the case of the Braisa rather where somebody goes into a carpenter's store and without permission and a piece of wood flies off and hits him in the face and kills him or injures him. Then we said so we said actually first we said that maybe Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina is referring to the second case where he came in Birshus, where the carpenter did give him permission to come in, and still we discussed he might be potter. Does that mean potter because he didn't do anything wrong, or on the contrary, Rava had said potter because he's too negligent and therefore golos, therefore going to the Ohrei Miklat won't help him? Then we said Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina's statement might refer to the first part of the Braisa, where he came in without permission, and we would say that therefore, and then in that case, we would say that the owner of the carpenter was somewhat negligent, but not so much so, and therefore he go therefore he'd be chayiv and golos in some cases, but potter he'd be potter in others because he'd be potter because it wasn't. It wasn't so careless of him because after all, the guy came in without permission. So the Gemara says, Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rava Masni Lo Ahal. Rav Zvid, in the name of Rava, said that Rav Yosi Rav Chanina's statement about the four things, about being chayiv and the four things versus potter from Golos, refers to yet another case. So not either of the cases that we said so far, or maybe also, we're going to see in the Gemara in a second whether, according to this version, it would also include those cases or not. He says that actually Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina originally referred to the following case. Now, a Pasuk says, Umotza, the one that the Pasuk describes the case where a person goes into a forest to chop wood and somebody else is there and something flies off the axe handle or a piece of wood and kills the other guy. And the Pasuk says that the one who was chopping has to go to the Ohrei Miklat. And the expression in the Pasuk is, Umotza Asreihu, that the thing that flew off finds somebody else and it kills him. So the word umotza says the Brai says prat lamamtzias atzmai. That comes to exclude a case where somebody made himself found, which means mikan omer Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Based on this, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov explains mishi yotze even mitachas yadei. Suppose that Reuven throws a rock, and at the time when he throws it, Shimon is not in the path of it. Then Shimon sticks his head out of a window, for example, and gets the rock in his head. So now he puts himself directly in the line of fire. Potter, then Reuven, who threw the rock, is Potter from Golos, because that would be Mamtzias Atzmai. When he threw the rock, it wasn't going to hit Shimon. Shimon himself stepped into the line of fire.
But he did something stupid, something to, something not safe. Clearly, just something not safe.
Yeah, but the fact is, at the time, if Shimon hadn't put his head over there, then nothing would have happened. Shimon never would have been injured or killed. So therefore, so the and the Pasuk is implying to us, therefore, that because of that, that because of that, Reuven is potter. So now, Omer Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, Potter Migolos V'chayi Ba'Ba'Dvarim. So now, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina clarifies for us, according to this version, that when we say Potter, we mean only Potter as far as Golos. He'd still be chayiv if Shimon got injured. He'd still be chayiv in the four things because, yeah, like you said, he is Peshaya. It was careless of him because he's throwing a rock into a place where people are likely to be found. So, but Xeris HaKosev, that he would be Potter from Golos. So, Mand Masni Lo'aha, the version, Reb Zvid's version, who learns that Reb Yosi Reb Chanina's statement is referring to this case, he would say all the more so it would apply to the previous cases where a person goes into a carpenter's workshop and gets injured or killed, where you have even more so there's even less carelessness over there because it's right there in his store, as opposed to here it's Rosh Hashanah. Whereas the version that would say that it refers to the earlier cases where he goes into the carpenter's workshop, then you would say the difference is the fact is he saw him come in. So therefore, that's more careless of him to not be more gentle with his chopping and make sure that it doesn't injure or kill the other guy. Avalaha, that version would say that in this case, where he threw the rock, Potter Lagamri, this version would actually say that no, not like Rabbi Yosef of Chanina had just said, that he would be completely Potter. Well, not like Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, but rather that version would say Rabbi Yosef of Chanina did not address this case in the first place. He would say, and the halacha would be, that he'd be potter completely, not only from Golos, but even from the Abad Varim, because, yes, you could argue it was a certain carelessness to throw a rock like that, but the fact is nobody was there in the line of fire at the time, and now this guy moved into it, and therefore you can argue that you can argue that it's the kind of onus that would patter him even from the Abad Varim. Okay. The Gemara continues, Tanabanan, Poyalim Shabolit Boyas Schoran Mibalabais. Suppose that workers come to a Balabais to demand their wages. They work for him, they want to be paid. They come into his chotzer. The nugchan shorish abalabayis, the balabayis' ox that's in his chotzer gores them. The noshchan kalbish abalabayis, or the balabayis' dog bites them. Ummes, if the guy dies from that potter, then he would be potter because they were in his rishus without permission. Acherim oimrim, on the other hand, acherim, which usually means the mayor says. Now Agos Habach adds the point, actually, that the shur is still going to get skila regardless, because when we say potter, we mean in particular if the shur was a muad, and then, as we've learned before, you'd have to pay koifer, you'd have to pay a certain monetary penalty to the victims of the yoshim of the victim, then you'd be potter from that. He'd be potter from that because they came in shaloi bereshus, but the ox itself would still be chayv skila, points out Agos Habach. Anyway.
Now, Shleimish just means that if they were told, okay, once you finish work, you can come to my house.
Well, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now in a second. What exactly is the scenario? So wait. So Acherim Oimrim, on the other hand, Acherim, which usually means the mayor says, no, Rashoyin Poilon, the Boyas Choron Balabayas. Workers have every right to go demand their payment from the Balabayas, so therefore it's considered that they went in Birushus. Well, the Gemara says, Hey Chidomi, what exactly is the scenario? If the guy is commonly found in the city, if you can easily find him in the streets of the city, and you can just go over to him there and demand your wages, my time at Acherim, then why are Acherim saying that they're coming, that they have the right to come to his property? Acherim should agree with the Tanakama that they should have just met him in the street. Who told them to come into his chotzer without rishus? And if he's not commonly found in the street, you mostly find him at home. My time at the Tanakama. Then why would the Tanakama say they can't come in? How else are they supposed to get their wages? Tosfos brings a slightly different girsa, not the shriach b'moso, the shriach b'besa, but rather the shriach b'shuka. Are we talking about somebody who you find, well, the Shriach B'Shukah would be effectively the same thing. You find him in the street versus not, but Tosfos points out another meaning of Shriach B'Masa could mean somebody who regularly stays in the city. So he doesn't usually travel outside the city very much. So then, fine, they may not find him in the street every day, but they're going to find him lots of times out of his house. On the other hand, Lo Shriach B'Masa would be, let's say, for example, a peddler who regularly travels to other cities. So then, after all, they have to go and get him before he leaves town. So then they should have the right to come to his house. So what exactly is the case where the Tanakama would say they shouldn't have come in, and Acherim are saying they had every right to come in? So the answer is, he's found but not found, meaning in other words he's found, you can find him in the street but not quite so much. So therefore, the Korya Baba. So what happens is this worker comes and knocks or calls at the door, the Omelahu, and the Balabas calls out, Ein, yes. So what does the word Ein mean? Mar Saba Ein Ul Ta Mashma. Acherim hold that the word Ein, yes, means yes, come on in. So then in that case, he gave him Rishus. Well, in that case, then the Balabas is responsible for anything that happens to the worker, if he gets injured or killed, because he told him, come in. So therefore, that would be similar to the cases we talked about before, about going into a carpenter's workshop or whatever without permission. Whereas the Tanakhama holds that the word ein means stand where you are, stay where you are, I'm coming out to talk to you. Which again, Tosfos points out, if Shriach, if you could regularly find him in the street, or he's mostly the time in town, then for sure, ein would mean stay where you are, you don't have to come in. And if he's not, then it means come in, because then he would realize, look, you know, I got to pay them, and I can't skip town without paying them. So that would be the case where they're arguing. So not where Shriach and not where not Shriach, because as we just said, if Shriach, then everybody will agree that they can't come in. And even if he says Ein, then as Tosfos says, we have to understand that to mean Ein as in stay where you are. Versus if he's not Shriach, if he's not regularly in the streets, or as Tosfos says, if he's not regularly in town, then for sure it would mean come on in, because he realizes that they have no other way of getting a hold of him. So we're talking about again, with Shriach, below Shriach, you can find him, but not all the time. So now then you have this machlokes of what the word ein means. So Detanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. If a worker could, so the Gemara says, sorry, I skipped the line. Tanya commander Omer ein kuma duch duch mashma. We learn a braisa that follows the opinion that says that ein means stay where you are. The Tanya, as we learn in a braisa, if a worker comes to collect a schar from the balabais, and the shur of the balabais gores him, or the dog bites him, potter, then the owner of the shur of the dog is potter. Again, potter, as we said, would mean from kofer. Potter, on the other hand, the shur itself would still be chayiv skila, as we said. And the second braisa says, even though he came in with rishus. So what do you mean? If he came in with a shrus, am I potter? Why would the owner of the animal be potter? El alav de kori abav. Therefore, we have to understand, what does it mean? Nichnas b'rashus means that he was calling at the door. He was calling at the door. And he says yes. And yet the braisa is saying that the balabas is potter from anything that happens to him. So ushmamino ein kumaduch doch mashma. Therefore, that shows that the word ein means stay where you are. I'm coming out to you. So therefore, the second braisa evidently must be talking about such a case, as Tosfos points out. Because again, if shriach, then the guy wouldn't be coming in the first place. And if lo shriach, then of course it means come on in. So therefore, the second braisa clarifies the first one, and it clarifies the opinion of the chachamim that yes, ein means kuma duchtach, stay where you are. I'm coming out to you. You don't have to come into my chotzer. And therefore, if now he comes into his chotzer anyway, and he gets injured or killed, then it's his fault. Now, with that said, though, the Rosh points out that these dinim are not. It's not. This isn't like this isn't like something where it's always in all times and all places. It's going to be this way. It really depends on what the common thing to do is at this time. First of all, in a given place, when a person says ein, when a person says yes, or whatever, does it mean? For example, nowadays, somebody knocks on your door and you say, "I'm coming." Does I'm coming usually mean I'm coming, you wait over there, or does it mean I'm coming, come on in, and let's talk? So it'll depend on different places are going to have different ways of doing things and so forth. So this din will actually depend on what the common local minhag is, whether it's reasonable for the worker to assume that he can come in safely or not. Now that we do, so having discussed the various obvious nizikin and certain details of them, now we're going to get back to, from here to the end of the perek and the beginning of the next perek, is going to talk about the dinim of Keren. Going back to the dinim of Keren, where an animal gores and injures or kills another animal or a person, then we're going to start talking about these dinim. Actually, it's going to cover pretty much also the entire next perek and the beginning of the perek after that as well. Mishnah says, Shnei Shvot. Now, one thing we have to keep in mind, of course, you know, we know already, as we've learned many times, that when a shur is tam the first couple of times that it's injured or killed, then he's paying only chatzi nezek. Only after that graduates to muad, and then you start paying nezek shalom. So the Mishnah says Shnei Shvorim tamim shechavlu ze es ze. If you have two oxen that were both tam and they injured one another, so two oxen got into a fight. And one of them and Reuven's ox injured Shimon's ox, and then Shimon's ox gave as good as it got and injured Reuven's ox. Mefoshim point out, by the way, that and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. We're talking about when both of them started together. If one of them started and the other one is just defending itself, then the dinim that we're talking about over here wouldn't necessarily apply, because after all, an animal or a person, for that matter, that's attacked has a right to defend themselves. Anyway, so here they injured one another. They both started the fight together. Meshamin b'moiser chatzi nezek. Then they pay chatzi nezek of the moiser. Meaning, in other words, we figure out which one caused more damage. And since both oxen are tam, then you're paying half of that difference. So Reuven's ox injured Shimon's. Shimon's injured Reuven's. Reuven's caused a larger amount of damage. Then Reuven is going to be paying. So most of it cancels one another out. But Reuven is going to be paying chatzi nezek of the extra. Shneim mu'adin. If both of them are mu'ad, mishamim b'moisu nezek shalim. Then they pay nezek shalim of the remainder. Echad tam ve'echad mu'ad. If one of the oxen is tam and one is mu'ad, tam b'moisu tam b'mu'ad. Muad b'tam b'shalim b'moiser nezek shalim. If the muad caused the greater damage, then he's paying nezek shalim of the remainder. Tam b'muad b'shalim b'moiser chatzi nezek. And if it was the tam caused the greater damage, then he's paying chatzi nezek of the remainder. Now Tosfos wonders actually that the whole Mishnah seems this whole part of the Mishnah seems to be unnecessary. Obviously, we would realize that if Reuven's ox caused 50 worth of damage and Shimon's ox caused 40 worth of damage, obviously 40 gets canceled out, and we're talking only about paying 10. What's the chiddush? And so Tosfos goes on to explain that. Now the Gemara is going to talk about a machloikas. What exactly when an ox causes damage, and we said a tam, you pay me gufoy. What exactly does that mean in terms of is the nizek is the one whose ox was damaged by this one? Is he a partial owner of that animal now, or do we say that just he's entitled to a certain monetary compensation? We're going to discuss that point in the Gemara. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, and therefore that's going to make, and therefore Tosfos says that the din of our Mishnah is really necessary in order to point out dinim that result from that we're going to talk about in connection, actually not in connection with this Mishnah, but in connection with the next Mishnah at the bottom of the Amud and on Amud Beis. So according to Tosfos, the first half of the Mishnah is not really teaching us much of a chiddush. It's kind of more an introduction to that point. On the other hand, the Rosh is medayek from Rashi, that Rashi learns differently. What it is like this, the Rosh explains. Tosfos would take the view. Now, let's say, so we're saying over here, you have one animal that's tam, one animal that's muad. Suppose now that the muad caused the greater amount of damage. Suppose that the muad caused 50 worth of damage and the tam caused 40 worth of damage. Now, one way we could look at it is, well, 50 minus 40 is 10, so therefore we're talking about the muad is paying 10. The other way we could look at it actually is that we could say, look, the tam is after all not paying 40. Maximum they're going to pay is 20 because they're paying chatzi nezek. So maybe we should say, therefore, the muad should be obligated to pay 30. So the Rosh points out that Rashi would hold that way. We would say. We would say you figure out the amount of difference between you figure out the amount of difference between them, and then you're paying half of that. So according to Rashi, so it comes out, there would be a big chiddush in the Mishnah that we're not saying that you calculate the full amount that you were not saying that you calculate the actual amount that's paid that's to be paid, and you make them more and pay the difference, because then, you know, like Tosfos says, there wouldn't be much of a chiddush in that. The chiddush is that we are actually calculating the total amount that would have had to be paid, and then you're going according to that. So you're looking at, therefore, the mord is paying only 10 in that case. So according to the Rosh, it comes out that according to Rashi, there is in fact a big chiddush in the Mishnah, whereas according to Tosfos would say no. I mean, the mord is paying 30 in that case. 50 minus 20 is 30, and there's not much of a chiddush in that. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. V'chein shnei anoshim shechov lo zebazeh. The same way, if two people injured one another, meshaman v'moisim nezik sholem, then again, you figure out the respective amount of the injuries, and then whichever one caused the greater amount of injury is the one who's paying nezik sholem of that amount, and again, the rest of it cancels each other out. Here, of course, there's no tam and mord because other mord lo olam. Where again, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions, you know, if one of them started the fight and the other one is only defending himself, then you're not going to be mechayev him to pay, provided that it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, it really depends. You know, are we talking about, you know, did he do like just what's needed in order to protect himself and no more, or did he go beyond that? Then you can be mechayev him. Then you can be mechayev him for what extra he did against the other guy. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Odom b'mu'ad u'mu'ad b'odom. Suppose that a shur mu'ad attacks. Suppose that a person attacks a shur mu'ad, and the shur mu'ad attacks a person. So the same thing. Meshalom b'moisim nezek sholem. Then again, you have nezek sholem on both sides. So therefore, it cancels each other out, and the one who caused the greater nezek is paying nezek sholem of that difference. Odom b'tam b'tam b'odom. What about if it was a fight between a person and a shur tam? Then odem b'tam meshalom b'moisim nezek sholem. If the person caused the greater damage, then he's paying nezek sholem of the difference. Again, subject to that machlokas Rashi and Tosfos as the Rosh understands it, and different other mafoshim discuss ins and outs of that, whether he's paying the full difference between nezek sholem and chatzi nezek, or whether he's paying the full difference between nezek sholem and what would have been nezek sholem on the other side. Tam ba'odim, meshalom b'moisim, chatzi nezek. And if the tam caused the greater damage, then he's paying chatzi nezek of the remainder. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva disagrees. In that last case, he says, no, af tam shechol ba'odim, even if a tam injures a person, meshalom b'moisim, nezek sholem, then the owner of that shur is going to be paying nezek sholem of the remainder. Meaning, he says, the whole concept of a tam paying chatzi nezek is only when one shur injured another, but when a shur injures a person, then, as the Gemara is going to say, Rav Akiva learns from a pasuk, that in fact the owner is paying nezek sholem. So, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, where is Rav Akiva getting this from? So like this, the pasuk says, the pasuk describes, after it starts talking about the case where a shur gores and kills a person, so a pasuk says, whether the shur kills a boy or a girl or a man or a woman, kamishpat hazeh ya'osaloi, like this law should be done to it. So what does that mean? Kamishpat shur b'shur, kach mishpat shur b'adam. The Chum say the word kamishpat means referring to the case of a shur that injures or that injures another shur, the same rule that applies to one shur to one shur injuring another shur, kach mishpat shur ba'adam, the same rule applies to a shur injuring a person. Ma shur b'shur tam meshalom chatzi nezek or mord nezek shalom. So just like when one shur injures another, you have the difference between tam and mord. Af shur ba'adam tam meshalom chatzi nezek or mord nezek shalom. Then the same thing applies to a tam injuring a person. So according to the Chachamim, that's where the Chachamim are getting their statement in the Mishnah that if the tam injures the person, then the owner of the tam is paying chatzi nezek. And again, if the person and the tam injured one another, then you figure out which one caused the greater damage and you go accordingly.
But once someone started it.
So that's what we're saying. If somebody started it, then the post can talk about, then you have to see who started it, and then he's the one who's liable, and the other one is just defending himself. But again, provided that you still have, in other words, you know, defending yourself doesn't, like this, you have, you know, all over the news, disproportionate force and all that folder all, you know. So here also, you have in halacha, there is that concept. You can't be using disproportional force. You are allowed to defend yourself, but you still have to, you have to hold yourself within certain limits. Anyway, So yeah, but here we're talking about, let's say that both of them, here we're talking about both of them stored it at the same time. So that's what the Tanakhama says. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says, the fact is, the Pasuk says, kamishpot hazeh, like this mishpot. So that means, in other words, that it means that you follow the rules that are right after that in the Pasuk, which is the cases that, so like this, you have three psukim back to back before this pasuk kamishpat hazeh ya'asalai. You have three psukim. One of them talks about a tam. Two of them talk about a muad, and then it continues with this pasuk kamishpat hazeh ya'asalai. So the chachamim are saying kamishpat hazeh is referring back to the first case. Therefore, saying that the rule of a tam still applies whether it was a person was injured or whether it was an ox that was injured. Rabbi Akiva is saying katachtan v'lekeoyin. He says it's referring to the second one, the one that's closer to the pasuk kamishpat hazeh ya'asalai, rather than to the earlier one, which is three psukim back. So therefore, he says that you're paying nezek shalom. As if it were a mu'ad. Yachol mishalom min ha'aliyah. You would think in that case, maybe then the owner of the tam has to pay min ha'aliyah, has to pay out of pocket rather than out of the value of the shur. Because if you're saying katachtan v'lekeoyin, if you're treating the animal like a mu'ad for this purpose, a mu'ad you pay min ha'aliyah, as we've learned before. So maybe that would apply over here. Talmud lema ya'osya loy. Therefore, the pasuk says should be done to him, meaning migufa mishalom ve'en mishalom min ha'aliyah. So you only pay migufa, you don't pay min ha'aliyah. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, in other words, the pasuk is implying that the din of this tam is a bit of a hybrid. You consider him as if it was a muad as far as paying nezek shalom, but you're paying that nezek shalom migufa rather than paying min ha'aliyah. So what do the Rabbanon answer back to that? Zeh lomali. What do they say that you're learning from the word kamishpat hazeh? Rabbi Akiva is saying hazeh is a miut, so it means the later case of muad, not the earlier case of tam. But the chachamim, who are saying that you don't do that, that you go back three psukim to the case of tam, so what are they doing with the word hazeh? The answer is lepoitir ma'abad varim. The chachamim say that it teaches us a different din, that if the shur injures a person, then you're potter from the other four things. You're paying only nezek. You're potter from tzad, ripui, shevis, and boshes. Because the balabai, the owner of the show, yeah. Because as we've learned before, those concepts of tzar and so forth only apply when a person causes injury, not when a show causes injury. Where does Rabbi Akiva know that from? He says, the Pasuk says elsewhere in Parshas Emor, it says when a person causes a mum in somebody else, then the Pasuk says, Kasha also, Kenya also loy, Shane tachas Shane, etc. Ayin tachas Ayin, whatever the Lashon is over there. And the point is, from that we learn, since already Nezek we know from other Psukim, then that teaches us about Tsar, and that teaches us about paying Tsar and the rest of them.
So we're speaking about an animal, that's speaking about a person over there.
No, because that's the thing. So Rabbi Akiva says that because it says, so that's the thing, ish ba'misay, v'lo shur ba'misay. You're learning, since the pasuk says a person causes an injury to somebody else, that's a miut. It means only if a person causes injury to somebody else are you paying abad dvarim, but if a shur causes injury, you're not. So therefore, that's the point. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that therefore you have that pasuk in Parshas Emor. Therefore, you don't need the one in Parshas Mishpatim. You don't need the hazeh to teach us that concept. Therefore, hazeh you're using instead to teach that the animal is chayiv as if it was a mu'ad.
Yeah. Each one is using something else.
Each one is using a different pasuk. Yeah.
Hazeh they're using for different reasons.
That's right. So the Tanakhama, right. So the Chachamim are using Hazeh to teach us the Chachamim are using Hazeh to teach us your potter from the Abad Dvarim. Rabbi Akiva says that you learn from a different pasuk. Therefore, Hazeh teaches us that you follow the Muad, not the Tan. V'Rabbanan, what do the Chachamim answer back to that? They say, Imeahi, if you only had the pasuk in Parshas Emor, have amin at Sar Lechode, then you would say, okay, you know what? So your potter, if you're sure injures a person, then your potter from Tsar. Aval ripui v'sheves emalitinlay. But when it comes to among the five things are ripui, the doctor's bills, and sheves, the fact that he had to lose time off work while he's recuperating. So emalitinlay, you would think maybe the owner of the shur has to give him that. After all, those are direct loss of money. Tsar, at least you could say, is not a direct loss of money. He experienced pain, but nevertheless, that in and of itself, so the payment for tsar is not actually something that he lost. In a way, it's a knas on the other guy. On the other hand, Ripley and Chavis, look, you know, he had to spend X amount on doctor's bills. He had to take X amount of time off work while he's recovering. Amalitinle, you would think that maybe the owner of the shirt is obligated to give to that. Kamashmalan is obligated to give that. Kamashmalan, therefore, comes the pasuk in Parshas Emor, Ish Bamisoy, implying but not sure Bamisoy, and tells us that no, you're not chayiv for those either when you're sure caused the injury. So in other words, the Chachamim are saying you need two psukim to teach us this concept. One to teach us that the owner of the shur is potter from Tsar, and another one to teach us that he's potter from Ripui and Shevis. So it's not extra. So where's Rabbi Akiva would disagree with that point, and he would say that once you have one pasuk, and that's good enough. So therefore, he would say you have an extra pasuk, and you can learn from it that, and you can learn from it katacht and v'lo ke'elyon, that you're following the rules of Mu'ad and not the rules of Tam. However, you follow the rule of Tam in that he does pay migufoy because of the word ye'osaloi that you do to him, which is also extra in the pasuk, implying therefore that you get paid out of the actual value of the ox itself. Again, that the, as we've learned before, that the amount that you're paying is capped at the value of the ox, and that's that.
It's only half, right?
Well, so you're only paying half, and if that half is the entire value of the ox, then you're entitled to the ox, and that's that, which is going to be the subject of the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. Tosfos discusses a couple of things in this that first of all, according to the Chachamim, fine. What do you need the word kamishbat? What is the word kamishbat doing in the pasuk? If it weren't for that, then you wouldn't learn hazeh to mean that you're potter from abad dvarim. You would learn it like Rabbi Akiva. And Tosfos discusses a few other points in this connection. One of them being that you could argue that maybe that Tsar and Ripui and so forth should be all considered part of Nezek. Maybe to begin with, we should for example, as far as Ripui, say so fine. Rather by sure we're saying again that you could say that Tsar and Boshas are irrelevant. Ripui and Shevis, you could argue, are included in Nezek. So now the owner of the shur could say, you know what, I'm gonna sell my shur, right? Instead of paying Ripley, I'm gonna sell my shur. I'm gonna go buy another one. And then you can buy a shur with the money I'm giving you. In other words, Tosfos says when we say the poter ma'abod varim, automatically if we're saying kamishbat shur b'shur, kach mishbat shur b'adam, according to Rabbi Akiva, doesn't that mean automatically if we're saying that we consider the rule of a shur injuring another shur, or actually according to the Chachamim, that we're saying that the rule of a shur to a shur is the same as the rule of a shur to a person, that either way you're paying chatzin nezek, automatically that means you're part of ma'abod varim. You don't pay abod varim when it comes to a shur injuring a shur. So why do we need a separate pasuk going to the Chachamim at all to pater him from abad varim? And so Tosfos says, look, by a shur, obviously you don't have those kinds of things. Tsar and Boshas are not relevant by a shur. Ripui and Shevis are included in the Nezek. But by an Adam you do have those things. So therefore you need a special limud that those kinds of things should apply. By a shur, that's the thing. When Tosfos was talking about selling it and buying another one, whatever, conceivably the owner of the shur that was injured could sell it and buy another one. He could go sell it and buy another one, and therefore. Well, because in other words, the point is that he could say, look, my shur was injured, so now I'm going to, instead of spending money on veterinarians' bills to heal it, I'll just sell it and I'll go buy another one that doesn't have any problems in the first place. But by a person, you can't say that. Okay. Fine. The Mishnah says, shur shovem monash shenogach shur shovem asayim. Suppose that a shur that's worth 100 zuz gored and killed a shur that's worth 200. The einan avela yofiklum. The carcass is worthless. So in other words, now there's been a total damage of 200. Well, the first ox being a tam, he's paying only chatzinezik, so that's 100. Now 100 is the actual value of the ox itself. So noitalos asher, then the din would be, says the Mishnah, that that Shimon would take the actual shur itself, and that covers the nezik. Well, the Gemara says masnisin manu Rabbi Akiva. In the our Mishnah is evidently only according to Rabbi Akiva. In Rabbi Akiva is going to say, as we're going to work out in the Gemara over here, what we're saying is that the shur that caused the damage actually becomes the property of the nizik, as opposed to we're going to have Rabbi Shmuel, who's going to say that it just means that he's owed that amount of money. He's not necessarily entitled to the shur itself. So at the Tanya, so if you want the, you could say that like this, you get the, I don't know if there's a Mila, but the point is Rabbi Akiva is saying that he's considered the owner of the shur, which is going to have different, nafkaminas, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. So the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when in this kind of case, Yushama shur based in Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says what we have to do is we figure out the value of the shur in Beistin, and then the mazik gives him the chatzin nezik accordingly. In this kind of case, in other words, where the total damage is equal to the value of the shur. So Rabbi Shmuel is saying that the nizik cannot necessarily demand the shur itself. Rabbi Akiva on the other hand, says that the shur actually is definitively now it belongs to the other guy, so he's considered the actual owner of it.
You're responsible to pay for your damage. Why does my animal become yours?
Because after all, the positive you're paying the gufa. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is saying that the owner of the nizek. Can say I'm entitled to that animal now. Your animal caused damage. The total amount you have to pay is 100. The animal itself that caused the damage is worth 100. I'm going to take that animal. And then it would also mean, therefore, that if the value of the animal was larger than that, let's say the animal was worth 150, then you would say they become partners in it. I now own 2/3 of that animal, and you own the remaining 1/3. So the Gemara says, "B'mai kamithugi." What is the underlying machlokas? So Rabbi Shmuel sava bal choyv. Rabbi Shmuel holds that the nizik is considered a bal choyv. V'zuzi hu demasik lay. So it's the other guy owes him a certain amount of money. It's as if he had borrowed money from him or something. So the shur itself doesn't become his. Rabbi Akiva sava shutvi ninu. Rabbi Akiva says the posik in effect is making them partners in the shur. Because in other words, the posik is talking when the posik says. The expression that a shur tam is paying chatzin nezek, and we're going to quote now the pasuk. The pasuk goes like this: V'chiyigach shur ish as shur de'ehu hames. Reuven's ox gores Shimon's ox and kills him. Umachrus as shur achai. So the pasuk says they should sell the live ox. V'chotzu as kasper and divide the value of it. V'gamus hames yechzun and also divide up the mess. So dividing up the mess, we learned before, meant that we learned in the first parak, it means we figure out the value of the nevela and we apply that towards the payment. So here in the Mishnah, we were talking about the nevela is worthless, but let's say, for example, we said then the nevela was worth 20, let's say, then that goes towards the value that, so part of that goes towards the value of the what he's paying, and therefore he's not paying full chatzin nezek because you subtract from that half the value of the nevela.
The nevela goes to who?
We said the nevela goes to the nizik. We said pras nevela the nizik. We learned in the first parak that if it deteriorates between when the thing happened and when they went to Beis Din, then it's on the nizik. We talked about then it's going to be that we're not going to say that the mazik has to compensate him more to make up for that. Rather, we say we look at how it was at the time that the thing happened. So we talked about over there. Let's say, for example, so the damage was 100, the nevela is 20, but now by the time we go to Beis Din, the nevela is only 15, then we're going to say we're going to figure on the basis of a payment of 80, and half of 80 is 40, and therefore that's what he's going to pay, as opposed to we wouldn't say that by now it's only worth 15, so therefore we're talking on the basis of 85 and paying chatzin nezek of that. No, you're not going to do that. Anyway, the point is, so the posuk is saying they sell the live ox and they divide the money. So what does that mean? So Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are arguing about the meaning of that possible. Rabbi Shmuel holds the Torah is speaking to the Beis Din, sell that ox and give half the money to the owner of the nizik. So you don't have any ownership of the shur hamazik itself. Just you're entitled to half the money. Rabbi Akiva Sava, the Nizik Ula Mazik, Mazik Ula Rachmana. Rabbi Akiva says the Torah is addressing the Mazik and the Nizik themselves. You're partners in it. So now if you Nizik want to collect your damages, so now you could conceivably say, okay, I'll be a partner in this ox eventually. When you shech this ox or you sell or whatever, then I'll get half my money. If you don't want to, then if he doesn't want to, he wants to be paid now, then he's going to tell the Mazik, well, then you have to sell the ox and we have to divide the money because I'm a partner in it and I want to dissolve our partnership and I want my money. The Gemara says, my benayu, what is the practical difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva's, dinim? Because after all, if it's just a matter of that, whether the Nizik is going to get half the money, again, it's the Nizik's prerogative to say that, I want my money now. However you want to raise that money is no concern of mine. So the answer is, hikdisha Nizik ikabenayu. The nafkamina between them would be, suppose that the Nizik makes it hekdish. Suppose that. So now, after all this took place, Shimon decides that I want to be makdish this shur. Well, does he have ownership of that shur to be able to do that? Rabbi Shmuel would say that no, he doesn't. He doesn't have any ownership of the animal itself. So therefore, there's nothing for him to be makdish. Rabbi Akiva would say he has half ownership of the animal. Therefore, he can be makdish his half.
Okay, you mean makdish something even though you're half and half. That there's someone else attached, can you be makdish?
Yeah, you can be makdish your half. All it means, in other words, is that you're going to have to sell it to somebody who needs it for a carbon or something. Yeah. Tosfos points out a couple of other possible nafkaminas that Gemara could have mentioned. One of them is exactly that. For example, can Reuven say, you know what, I'm not interested in selling this ox. I'll give you your money from some other source and have done with it. According to Rabbi Akiva, Shimon can say, you know what, I actually would like to have half that ox. I would like to be paid out of that ox and I'm a part ownership of it. You can't just dissolve this partnership without my permission. So therefore that would be a nafkamina.
Who wants to be a partnership with a
who wants to be whatever? Let's
no,
say
trouble,
I understand, but let's say he wants to be. It's one step closer, but still, yeah, it's still time at the time. And by the way, we're going to learn later in the Masechta, you can talk about when an animal is moored and then it's sold to somebody else, that it reverts to tam status. We're going to talk about that later on, and why that is. Exactly that an animal is moored and then it's sold or gifted or whatever to somebody else, then the clock resets, kind of. We're going to talk about that later in the Masechta, yeah. Anyway. So that would be one. Tosfos also points out, let's say the Mazik sells the animal. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you would be able to sell it to somebody else where he can at least use it for plowing. Fine. Eventually, if he decides to shech the animal, then we have to talk about that you have to pay the Nizik out of it. But right now, for example, he might be able to plow with it, whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, not. Although Hagoyes HaGrua points out that Rambam disagrees with that nafkamina and says that in fact even Rabbi Akiva would agree that you're able to sell the animal. And Tosfos points out there are a number of other nafkaminas. The Gemara is taking one nafkamina, but in fact you could find a whole bunch of others.
Which anyway. Is Tal Gemara, you'll mention a few, but
yeah. So Hikdishin Nizik Ikabinai. Well, Bomine Rava Ben Amnachman. Well, that leads Rava to ask Rav Nachman a question. Mochre Mazik. Well, according to Rabbi Shmuel, what would happen if the Mazik sold the animal before he paid off the Nezek? Since Rabbi Shmuel is saying that he's only considered a Baal Choyv, he's owed a certain amount of money, but he doesn't have any monetary ownership of the shur itself. So Vizuzi or Damasically, he just owes him money. Mochu, then it would be a valid sale. Oidoma, but maybe not. Kibin de Meshabed Leila Nizik, since after all, there's a shibud on this animal to the Nizik, because after all, if he doesn't pay him, then he is going to be entitled to take the shur. So then maybe Lav Kol Kamine, maybe he doesn't have the ability to go and sell it and take away that shibud. So what would be the din? So in other words, on the face of it, Rava's question is not according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Akiva, for sure, since he's a part owner of the shur, then the other guy can't sell it without his permission. The question would be strictly according to Rabbi Shmuel. On the other hand, like we just said, Agoris HaGrua points out that Rambam does say La Halacha. The Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva against Rabbi Shmuel, and the Halacha is that if he did sell it, it's sold. So even Rabbi Akiva would agree. B'dieved, that if it's sold, it's a valid sale, and different noisa kalim on the Rambam discuss how exactly the Rambam extracts that from the sugya. Anyway, so uh, um, okay, so uh, So that's the question. Tosfos discusses over here, what about them? I mean, Freya who goiva, he's goiva retroactively, and you have it's still considered that it is in his possession right now, but nevertheless, fine, it's sold, it's still a valid sale, and you collect from it afterwards. So Tosfos discusses a bunch of the ins and outs about that, about the goof versus the shevach and various other considerations. Anyway, Omale, sort of Nachman answers it, Ene Mochu. It's not a valid sale. So Rava asks, well, Tanya Mochu in Mochu, what do you mean though? We learn a Braisa that says that if he did sell it, it is a valid sale. So Rav Nachman says, okay, it means it's a valid sale, but Chozer Gevehu means that now the Nizek is going to be able to collect this shur from the one who bought it. So Reuven had a shur that killed Shimon's shur. Now Reuven went and sold that shur to Levi. So Shimon, according to Rabbi Shmuel, is going to be allowed to go over to Levi and say, you know what, I have a shibud on this animal because I was supposed to be paid out of it. So therefore, you shouldn't have bought it from Reuven, and I want it.
But is there a coil that he should not?
That's what the Gemara is going to discuss. So the Gemara asks, "V'chima achol shachoyz of gevehu loma mocher." Well, in that case, in what sense are we saying that it's sold? If you can't keep it anyway, then what sense is it a valid sale? And the answer is l'ridya. As far as plowing, if the lekeach, if Levi used this ox to plow, he's not going to have to pay Shimon for the benefit that he had from it from plowing, because after all, he did own it. He did own the animal, just that now he has to return it to Shimon, but he doesn't have to compensate Shimon for the fact that that he used it in between.
That always means plow this portion.
The word ridya means plow. Yeah. So that's according to Rashi. Hagoris HaGroa points out that a number of Rishonim, the Rambam and the Rashba, learn that actually that Levi would be allowed to plow with it even l'hatchila. We wouldn't say that. Look, he bought an animal that's under Shimon's shibur. Maybe he should hold off on using it until Shimon collects it. No, he would l'hatchila be allowed to plow with it during that time. And to that extent, it's considered a valid sale. So the Gemara says, Shema Mina. Well, does that mean why is Shimon able to collect it anyway? Shema Mina Lovo Moicha Metalplin based in Goven Lamehem. Can we learn from that if a person borrows money and then he sells his Metalplin based in can collect from that? This sure is Metalplin. How is Shimon able to collect according to Rabbi Shmuel, where he's just owed money, like any person who's owed money and was saying he can collect from this sure? Why? It's Metalplin. And we know that Metalplin are not under a shibud in the first place. The answer is shiny hossam. It's different in this case. The command da soya posiki dum, because it's the equivalent. Rabbi Shmuel is going to consider it as if he made the ox an aposiki, meaning that he designated this is going to be what you're going to collect it out of. And in that case, then yes, he's able to collect from the Talmud.
So this the Rabbi making him aposiki.
In other words, in effect, Rabbi Shmuel is saying the posik in effect is kind of making it an aposiki. Yeah. So the Gemara says, well, even so, v'ha'omar rova. Didn't Rava say that even as far as that, there's a difference? If you make your Eben an Aposiki Reuven is borrowing money from Shimon. Reuven has an Eved. He tells Shimon, you're going to be able to collect from this Eved. Later on, Reuven goes and sells that Eved to Levi. Then Shimon is entitled to collect from the Eved, to take the Eved from Levi in payment of the debt. Then the Balchoiv is able to collect from it. But sure the Aposiki, but Rava says that if he makes a sure an Aposiki or Mochre and then he sells it in Balchoiv Govehemenu, then the Balchoiv cannot collect from it. So then how are we saying over here that you made the sure an Aposiki? How can you collect from it? The answer is we have to consider Ebed my timer. Why would you be allowed to collect from an Ebed, even though an Ebed is metalblin? Mishum de Islay Kola. Because with an Ebed, there's a coil. The same way as you're allowed to collect from Karka, because there's a coil that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and therefore it's well known, and therefore somebody else is buying Karka. Should keep that in mind. The same way in Ebed, it becomes well known there's an Aposiki on it. If nothing else, because the Ebed himself tells people about it. Well, hi Nami, in this case as well, with the shur, given the nogach, once it gored, kola islay, the Torah nakhona korale, people call it an ox that gores, even if it's not technically moored yet, still it has a coil, and therefore you can say that, Levi should have known about that, and he shouldn't be so quick to be buying this animal, and if he does, then Shimon has a right to collect it from him. Okay. Continues.
If he buys it, but meanwhile, he got it.
in between.
So that's what we're saying. Levi can Levi plows it, or if Levi plows with his animal or whatever, that's what we're saying. We just said that Shimon can't demand money for it. He can't demand money. And in fact, according to somebody showing him, Levi would even be allowed to use it for plowing until Shimon comes to collect it. So the Gemara continues, Tony Rab Tachlifa Bama Rova Kameh de Rababohu Mochre Ein Mochur. He learns a braisa. Tachlifa teaches a braisa that says, yes, if he sells the animal, then it's not a valid sale, but he kdisha mukdash. But if Reuven made the animal hektish, then it would be hektish. Well, we have to figure out Mochre Man. Who are we talking about sold it? Elam Mazik. Are we talking about that Reuven, the Mazik, is the one who sold it? Mochre ein mocher. Then we're saying if you sell it, it's not a valid sale. Mani Rabbi Akiva. Apparently, that's according to Rabbi Akiva. Mani Rabbi Akiva. The Amahuchlat Asher. Whereas we said before, Rabbi Akiva holds the actual shur itself belongs to the Nizik. So therefore, Reuven has no right to sell it without Shimon's permission. Because we said, we have the case of our Mishnah where the full amount of the Hezek is 200, Chatzin Hezek is 100, the total value of the Shur is only 100, and Rabbi Akiva said, Hochlat Asher, the Shur now belongs 100% to Shimon, to the Nizek.
The one who got killed.
The one whose ox got killed, yeah.
Nizek is the one.
The Nizek is the one who suffered the damage. Okay. The Mazik is the one who caused the damage. So that would be according to Rabbi Akiva. And Rashi points out that when it says mocher ein mocher, it sounds like it means it's not even valid as a temporary sale. So we wouldn't even say, like we said before, that Levi has the right to plow with it or to otherwise use it until Shimon comes to pick it up. On the other hand, hikdishe mukdash. But when you're saying, on the other hand, you're saying that. I skipped the line. So mani Rabbi Akiva dama hochlat asher vehikdishe mukdash. On the other hand, we're saying if you declared it hektish, then it is valid hektish. Asan Rabbi Shmuel. That seems to go according to Rabbi Shmuel. Dama yusham asher bebeistin. That follows Rabbi Shmuel, who says that you figure out the value of it in beistin, and then you pay that amount. So that means, and as we said, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you just owed money. You don't own the actual shur itself. Therefore, Reuven would have every right to be makdish. So who is this braisa like? Ela Nizek. So it can't be that the braisa is talking about that the mazik Reuven sold it, because then the braisa would be inconsistent. Why is it that he's allowed to sell it? Why is it that he's not allowed to sell it, but he's allowed to be makdish? Ela Nizek. So are we talking about that the Nizek sold it? Well, Mochre Einem Mocher. So we're saying if he sold it, it's not a valid sale. Mani Rabbi Shmuel. That would seem to go according to Rabbi Shmuel. Hikdisha Mukdash Hasan Rabbi Akiva. But then why can we Makdash it? That would follow Rabbi Akiva. So either way, it seems that Braisa is inconsistent. The answer is La'olam Mazik. We can say that the Braisa is in fact talking about the Mazik selling it about Reuven, the Divrei Hakol Mocher Einem Mocher, because Afilu Rabbi Shmuel, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, you can't sell it. Like we said at the top of the Amud, Dorma Shabdele LeNizik, because after all, it's under a Shibur to the Nizik. On the other hand, Hikdishe Mukdash, why is it that if he's Makdash it, it's valid Hektish? That would be Afilu Rabbi Akiva, Mishum de Rabbi Bohu. That would be on the basis of what Rabbi Bohu says. Dorma Rabbi Bohu, Gzeira Shami Yemru, Hektish Yotzibul opinion. In truth, it shouldn't be Mukdash, but you don't want people to think that real Hektish can go out of the property, can go out of the possession of Hektish without being redeemed. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is saying it's true that the Hektish is not actually Chau, because at this point, the shur belongs to Shimon. Reuven doesn't have, the Hezek was 100, and the value of the shur is 100. And according to Rabbi Akiva, Huchlat Asher, we said that the shur now belongs strictly to Shimon. So Reuven doesn't really have a right to be Makdish it. But nevertheless, you don't want people to think that Hektish can be can go out without pidyon. Therefore, we are going to consider it Hektish. So you don't have to be poyde for its full value, but at least you have to give a pruta to Hektish, in order that people shouldn't think that Hektish that you can just take Hektish without having to pay for it at all.
Someone's going to think because of this one case.
Because of this one case. Rashi mentions that Rabbi Bohu's original din is in connection with a din in Masech Te'erchin. A person has Nechosim and he's Makdish them. And meanwhile, he owes money to his ex-wife for Huxuba, and he owes money to Bali Choyvas. So his Hektish is valid, but nevertheless the wife or the Baal Chayv can collect from those Nechosim, but only if they pay a pruta to Hektish. And why is that? Same idea. So we don't think that Hektish Yotze B'loi Pidyon.
That doesn't the wife collect that, not from Talton, but from
She can collect from Kalka, but you can also have, for example, where there's no Kalka available, or where there's metalton that he reserved for the Ksuba, etc. Yeah. So the same kind of thing. They have to give a pruta. They have to give a pruta, and that's only because midrabanan, so people don't think that hektish yotze below pidyon. So same thing over here. Tosfos deals with over here. There may be a difference of. First of all, we could be talking about that it was done to. Now, if we're talking about that it was done as hektish mizbeach, if it was actually done as hektish to be brought as a korban, then it's got kedushas domim. Then that's different. Maybe it doesn't. It has kedushas a guf. That would be different. Here we're talking about it's only got kedushas domim. It was donated to bedek abayis. So either it's a baal mum or it's a baal mum or it's a tam. And even though you're not supposed to be giving those to Bedek HaBayis, but b'dieved, that's fine. So actually, Tosfos points out like this. Now, there are various places in Shas where we discuss the point that hektish can override a shibud. Hektish mafkiya midei shibud. We learned about it in various places. So over here, and Tosfos discusses in a few places, what kind of hektish are we saying is strong enough to override a shibud? Kedushas aguf or even kedushas damim. If we say kedushas aguf, then we'd have to be talking about over here that's kedushas damim. That you donate it to Bedek HaBayis and therefore it doesn't override the shibud. If you say Rabbi Natan learns in various places that even kedushas domim is enough to override shibud, so why over here would we talking about that you have to give the pruta anyway? We should say it is full fledged hektish because it is full fledged hektish and that overrides the shibud. You should have to pay the full value of it to hektish.
You're taking something that belongs to someone else. Really,
but it's kedushas domim, though. That's the thing. If we say that kedushas domim, even that kedushas domim is strong enough to override a shibud, then it would mean okay. But you want to collect from this shibud, then you have to pay for it. If you're entitled to go to the mazik and say you have to pay me something else because you took away my shibud, mazik shibud shochavera, it's called, but which the Gemara is going to start talking about soon now. But the point is, at least we should say that the hektish is valid hektish. Why are we saying it really isn't? And only with the rabbanon we make him pay the pruta. So Tosfos says because on the other hand the chachamim make the shibud of a nizik stronger, just like we learned in Ksuba, just like Tosfos refers to that we say that the husband's shibud is stronger in certain ways over his wife's nechasim. The same way we hear the chachamim make the nizik shibud stronger, and therefore kedushas damim is not enough to override it. So therefore it's technically not hektish, but the chachamim are requiring to pay the pruta so that people don't think that hektish yotze b'lo pinyan. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Then we learn in a Braisa, shur tam shehizik, when a shur tam caused damage, ad shalai omad badin, before they went to Bastin, before Shimon the Nizik took him to Bastin, machre macher, if at that point he sells the shur, then it is a valid sale. Hikdishe mukdash, if he declares it hektish, then it is valid hektish. Shochta even nosnim matana, if he shechted it or he gave as a gift, masha also osri, then what he did is done because they haven't even gone to Bastin yet. So you don't even have to. So then nothing. When they go to Bastin, then you're going to be paid. Then he's going to have to pay Shimon. He's going to have to pay Shimon, but he'll pay him out of something else. Misha Omad Badin, on the other hand, if he did any of these things after they went to Bastin, Mochra Enim Mochra, then if he sold it, it's not a valid sale. Hikdisha Enim Mukdash, and if he was Makdash, it's not Mukdash, even as far as having to pay the Pruta. Shachta Venosna Matanolai Osavalai Klum, if he shefts it or gives it as a gift, then it doesn't count for anything because it's not his. Kodmu Bali Chovis Vihigbihu, if a Baal Chov of his comes and takes the shur to collect some other debt that he owes them, bein ad shalei hizik, bein ad shalei chav, bein chov ad shalei hizik, bein hizik ad shalei chav, then it doesn't matter whether the chov came first or the hezik came first, loy also v'loy klum, those bali chovas haven't been able to do anything because the nizik is entitled to the shur, l'fisha in mishtalim, elam migufay, because the payment for the nezik of a tam comes only migufay. The Gemara is, after we bring this price, so the Gemara is going to go through it phrase by phrase and explain what it means. Muad shehizik, on the other hand, continues the Braisa. If a muad caused damage, ben shalom ad bedin, whether they went to Bastin or not, then mochre mochre, if he sold it, it's a valid sale, because anyway, he's not paying out of the goof, he's paying min ha'aliyah, he's paying from some other possessions of his anyway. So there's no, so even so, so the machlokas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva is not even relevant whether in this case, whether there's a shibud on it or not, whether yuchlat asher or not, because that applies only to a town. So therefore, so mocher and mocher, if he sells it, it's a valid sale. Hekdish and mokdish, if he makes it hektish, it's a valid hektish. Shocht of anas nematana masha also also. If he sells it or gives it a matana, what's done is done, it's valid. Kodmu bali chavis vihigvihu. And if bali chavis of his, of Reuven's, go and collect it, ben chav ad shle hizik, ben hizik ad shle chav, whether the chav came first and then the hezik, or the hezik came first and then the chav, masha also also, then what he did is done. Lefishen mishnalim, and a min haliyah, because anyway, you're paying only min haliyah, and therefore what happens to the shor itself is irrelevant. Yeah. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this braisa. When we say in the first case that when the animal is a tam, and we're saying that if you sold it before they went to Beis Din, then we said the sale is a valid sale. So that means the ridya. That means it's a valid sale as far as plowing. Like we said before, that he doesn't have to repay for the plowing afterwards for the benefit that he got from the plowing because temporarily it was a valid sale. Hikdish and mukdash. We said if it was makdish the animal. Then that would be strictly according to Rabbi Shmuel. Although again, the Rambam learns that particular detail would work even according to Rabbi Akiva. Even according to Rabbi Akiva would say that it is sold as far as Ridya. Anyway, Hekdish Mukdash, Mishum de Rabbo. The Hekdish would be a valid Hekdish because of what Rabbi Bo said. We don't want people to think Hekdish Yotzebul opinion. So you see, we have to figure out when it says if he shechted it or if he gave it as a present, what he did is done, meaning it's a done deal. So why? If he gave it as a present, then yeah, it's the same thing as selling it. It means, in other words, the other guy can plow with it and he doesn't have to repay for it. But what do you mean that if he shechted it, masha also osri? What do you mean, in other words, now it's out of the jurisdiction of the nizik, and now the nizik can't collect from it anymore? Now he tells the mazik, okay, you still have to pay me 100. You're going to have to pay me from some other source. Why? Why can't he have the right to say, I want to be paid out of the meat of it? I don't want, because after all, now you're asking before why the Nizik would want to do that. I mean, one practical reason might be the Nizik is concerned that the Mazik may say, I have no other possessions to pay you with. He's going to start evading things in Beis Din. So he says, look, you know, you have an asset right here that's available, the shur, or now the meat of the shur. Let me just collect from that and have done with it. So why don't we say that? The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says chai, the Pasuk says that they sell the living ox, a mocher is asher chai, as we quoted on Omer Aleph, aimli al chai, we would only know from that Pasuk that it applies if the ox that caused the damage is still alive. Shocht eminayin, how do we know the same thing applies even if it's shechted? Tamad laimo, mocher is asher mikol mokem. Therefore, the Pasuk says if they sell the shur regardless, meaning, in other words, even otherwise, the Pasuk could have said, mocher is achai, because the Pasuk is making it clear, we're talking about two oxen, so it didn't have to repeat the word shur, so it means you sell the shur regardless. So even if the shur is dead, for example, it was shechted, the nizik is still allowed to collect from it. So why are we saying over here, shachdei,
done deal.
Shachdei, it's a done deal, and therefore you can't collect from it. So the answer is, Amar of Shizbi, lo nitzrucha el pachas shchita. You're right. What the braisa means when we say that you sell the ox is that he's entitled to collect from the dead ox. It means that again, even though the value of it went down from the fact that it was shechted, nevertheless, the mazik does not have to pay that difference to the nizik. When we say masha osa osui, what we mean is, in other words, alive, this ox would have been worth 100. Dead, as shechted, as meat, it's worth only 80. So we don't say that he has to compensate it. Or rather, what we would say is that it went down in value. The mazik doesn't have to pay the difference. He just takes as it is. So he would say, in other words, look, you know, I know I owed you 100 to begin with, but you're entitled to collect only out of the shur. Now the shur has been shechted. Now the value of the meat is only 80. So fine, you can take all the meat, and there's your 80, and that's that. So the Gemara asks. In that case, the Gemara says, Omer of Hunab Yeshua, Zois Emeris. From this we can learn a din. Hamazik shibud shachaveh rei potter. If one person damages a shibud that belongs to somebody else, then he would be potter. In other words, exactly that. So a similar case. Let's say you have a field. Let's say you have a field that was meshubad to somebody else for a loan. If Reuven, the owner of the field, goes and causes damage to that field, he would be potter from paying the difference to the other guy, to the Baal Choy, because we would say it's not yours yet; it's still mine. And I have the right to be mazik my thing. Now, Tosfos points out there's a machloikas about that in Gittin that we learned about. So evidently we see from this braisa that in fact he would be potter. So in the same way over here, where he should have been paying 100 out of the goof of the shur, and instead he shechted and now it's worth only 80, we're not requiring him to make up the other 20. Well, the Gemara says pshita. Well, then yeah, obviously you can learn that din from this braisa. What's the chiddush? And the answer is ma'u detayma, because you could draw a distinction. Hossam who de omale, because in the case of the one who shecht the animal, he can say loy chasotich v'loy midi. In a certain sense, he can say I didn't cause you to lose anything. De omale, you can say zika ba'almo who de shakli minach. All I did is I took away before the show was alive, and now it's dead. All that's missing is the breath of light. All that's missing is the breath of life in it. Avo ba'alma, but in the case of mazik shibudei, so for example, you have a field and you went and actually dug bodas shichun ma'oris in it, or you did something in it to actually literally reduce the value of the field. So you would say l'chayev, maybe he should be chayev kamash malan. And Rav Huna is telling us that no, even in that case he's potter, even though there's an obvious change in the field that before it was worth X amount and now it's worth less because he ruined the kalk over there by digging randomly in it. Nevertheless, we still say he's potter. So the Gemara asks, in that case, Honami Rabba Amra. Still though, in that case, Rabba said that din. So why would Rav Huna bread the Rav Yeshua have to say it? Now, of course, the Gemara could say that so what? Rabba is an Amora and Rav Huna bread the Rav Yeshua is an Amora. But Rabba is a very important Amora. So Rashi points out, when you have something that Rabba or Rav or any other really prominent Amora said something, it's practically as if it said it in a Mishnah or a Braisa. So therefore, we can ask, why would Rav Huna bread the Rav Yeshua have to repeat something that Rabba said? If Shimon takes Reuben's shtoris and burns them, then he's potter, because it's only mazik shibodei. Now Reuben is not going to be able to collect using these shtoris because they've been burnt, but you can't say that Shimon caused him a direct hezek. It's kind of a grub, sort of. So therefore you see a mazik shibodei shachaveh potter. So therefore you can derive from that this case about shechting the ox. And the Gemara says still there's a difference. Ma'u detema, hosam hu de'omale, because in the case of the burning the shtaris, you can tell him, niyorab alma kaloy minoch. All I did is I burnt a piece of paper of yours. It's not a hezek nicker that you can tell that these papers were something special.
Yes, you can't reflect it.
That's true, but nevertheless, you could still say paper is paper. Aval hecha dechofa b'boris shichon amaris, but where he dug pits and things in the kalka, and you can notice a difference in the kalka. L'chayev, maybe he should be chayev for maybe therefore when the Baal Chayev comes to collect that field, you should have to pay him the difference. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav Huna Bred Rav Yeshua is telling us that even not. Because after all, you can consider the case that we were talking about over here about shechting the animal. It's after all fundamentally the equivalent of digging pits in the ground, because you can see the obvious difference between a live show and a dead one. And still the Braisa said Masha Osasri. So therefore we can show from that even if he dug Boris Shichon Ma'oris in the ground, where there's a clear, obvious difference between the way it was before and the way it is now, nevertheless, that's only Mazik Shibud Shochaveri, and he would in fact be potter. Okay. And then we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with analyzing more of this Braisa.
A live animal versus an axe is made of plowing. That's it. You lost such a big value.
That's the thing. First, the Gemara had said that's a difference. First, the Gemara had said it's like an intangible difference, because first the animal was alive and now it's lacking the breath of life, but there's not maybe such a difference. But now we're saying that no, even though there is a very noticeable difference, nevertheless, we see that nevertheless he's potter. And the same thing, if he digs pits in the ground over there and is mazik shibud shachaveira, then also we can potter him on the same grounds.
Years of use of it, and here that's it. There's no filtration. You got to meet in 2 days and gone.
Yeah, that's what it is.